Greetings, friends. We're back again. It's Monday, November 27th. Chapo is coming back at you. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend and a very thankful time spent with friends and family. I hope you didn't lose your mind listening to your friends and family or spending time with them. It's always a nightmare. But we're here to kick off the week, and we're here to kick off Truenhan week here on Chapo, because holding down the third spot today is our good friend Brace Belden. Brace, welcome back.
Hello. It's so nice to be back here, ensconced in the bosom of Capo Fap. Well, there was never, no one ever really comes up with a new thing for house. They always call it like Crapo Smap House or something, but they always keep house.
Nothing really rhymes with house.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say like the house frows. You could say that we're sort of like homely women who pumped out too many kids. No, yeah, no one really tries.
I'll give it a think. Yeah, I'll give it a think.
Sort of Art Spiegelman's mouse, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You could do something with that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait. Check this one.
Trap Mouse by Art Spiegelman.
Fappo Jack Couch.
That's pretty good.
I don't know about that one. It's weird to jack off on a couch anyways, but that's neither here nor there. I feel like it's a creepy place to do it.
Yeah, if you jack off on a couch, you're either like 11 years old or you're like the richest guy in the world.
Yeah.
You got like couches to spare. You don't give a shit.
You're in like a really low couch in like the house that he goes to in Heat by the ocean, and just like there's nothing in there but like a giant sort of one of those curved TVs, and you just have, I guess it's gooning, kind of.
Gooning?
It's like an elevated gooning.
I did not know what gooning was until like this year, and I just thought it meant jacking off. Oh, Lord, how mistaken I was.
Yeah, it's a relatively new phenomenon for me as well.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I think it seems so totally bizarre to me because, like, what is pleasurable about jacking off for like 12 hours? I mean, isn't the whole joy of sex that it's over relatively quickly?
The only time you should be jacking off after like being a teenager is if you need to make a big decision or if you need to be sleepy. There's no other. What are you're horny? It's like, give me a break. It's so insane to be horny. Like, I got to jack off right now. No, you got to do it before you figure out what you're cooking for dinner or before. I mean, I guess that's really it. There's no real other big decisions a lot of people are making day-to-day life, but that's it. I mean, any other time, I think it's a little distasteful and juvenile.
I think it's like there's a third situation in which it's acceptable, and that's like if you find yourself like typing up something after like a mass shooting and you're like you're saying something like, people, just be kind to each other. How fucking hard is it? And you stop yourself and you're like, oh, I should jack off.
Yeah. I'm thinking also it's like bus. I feel like is where you should do it too. Like if you're just riding the bus or a train. Or something.
Yeah, because it's boring.
Yeah. Long flight.
I am curious about like, I mean, I would assume that gooning has only been around, you know, as long as the home computer setup has. But do you think like a really like a Howard Hughes type who was always inventing stuff could have come up with like a pedal operated magazine page turner
or
like an analog gooning setup?
Like, I mean, there's also just it's potentially if you had a manse big enough, you could have enough like reel to reel projectors of various sizes. But I would say go back even further than that to the Stone Age. I mean, people, you know, they're always discovering some new like cave painting or whatever, something etched into a wall. I would say that probably back then, if we look hard enough in enough caves, there's probably caves that are pretty much just crude stick figure drawings of big boobies.
Well, one of the most famous cave paintings is the Chevalier Caves in France, which Werner Herzog made a documentary about. And one of the most famous cave paintings is just a wall of handprints. And I think that was just like the mark of achievement after you blasted off after gooning for 12 hours, you know, into a saber-toothed tiger skull or something. Then you just whap a hand on the wall, stain it. You're like, I was here. I gooned 30,000 years ago.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't think Neolithic man was gooning. I don't think there was enough time for that. I think this is definitely a symptom of too much free time and comfort.
Yeah.
Technological age. Yeah.
I'm guessing it started like when, I guess, probably the advent of nobility. And like after society had split into classes, when we had just like a full on leisure class, that's when you had time to do it.
Yeah. I can't imagine that you'd have much time for gooning when the average was having like 15 kids.
Yeah.
Because like 12 of them would die. Like, you don't really have seed to spare.
Plus, like, I mean, if you think about it, like up until probably like, I'm going to say 1960, like there weren't really good looking people. And so like you might not yeah. even like it might not even occur to you to like let jack alone, off let alone, because you're like,
yeah, well, let alone voluminous like photographic evidence of attractive people that you could devote hours of your attention to.
Like if you're like a serf, you've never statistically seen a barstool smoke show or anything like that. You've never
absolutely
never,
not.
Never even dreamt of glimpsing
absolutely
a baddie.
Not.
You know? Like the hottest woman you could imagine is like the Virgin Mary or something like that. It's obviously you can't jack off to that. So it's like you just everyone around you is just covered in pig shit, disgusting warts. Their faces are distended in ways that we can't do now. They're disgusting. No teeth.
Yeah.
So you're like, I'm not going to jack off to that.
To jump forward in time a little bit, you know, like the first attractive people started showing up, like, you know, generously, we could say World War II, but really, we all know it was the 60s.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, we had less division in America when, like, there was only, like, one or two hot women at a time that people could goon to?
Like, it was like Betty Grable, Rita Hayworth, and then that was about it.
Yeah. Like, there was a time when, like, 70 million American men are all gooning to Janet Leigh.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's the only one.
Well, I think it's just like it's something that, you know, society is so just atomized now, and like people don't have the same kind of just connections and communal life that they used to have. I think one of them is that there's just too many hot chicks, and I think that drives a lot of people to a complete madness. And like, you know, they either it's the goon cave, but some people are kind of in a goon cave of the soul, and they just like, this is, it just drives them insane to begin with.
Like, unlike, you know, the Janet Leigh shower scene in Psycho, or like that you'd see like Marilyn Monroe's ankle and like the entire country would be sprung. I feel like now, like in the, you know, atomized kaleidoscopic universe of technology, you're right, Brace. The average man is exposed to like tens of thousands of hot women on a day-to-day basis.
I want to push back on that. I want to push back on that a little bit. I feel like the shower scene for a lot of people was erotic because, I mean, think of the time it was filmed. Many people hadn't taken a shower before. It was all baths.
Until Alfred Hitchcock directed that scene in Psycho, most women did not know that you were supposed to be nude when bathing.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So Hitchcock introduced that to the American psyche. And like, yeah, he showed a violent murder scene and then connected being horny to having a mother, thus inventing psychology.
He really got a lot done in a really short period.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just like the gooning thing is just like so much fucking time. I mean, like, whether it's sex or jacking off, I just want to get it over with. I just want this poison out of me.
There's nothing in my life I want to take any longer than it does.
it's like waiting online. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't feel this way now, but when I was like 12, I would jack off for like psychotically long periods. But that's like before you have responsibilities and pay taxes. I couldn't imagine doing that now.
When I was 12, I was looking forward to smoking cigarettes. Like, I knew that was going to be something I'd really like, but yeah. I couldn't get my hands. I was like 13 was when I was able to like finally like get them, because I was in high school and other kids had them. But when I was 12, that's kind of all I could think about. I was like, it's going to be so, we stole Black Milds once and smoked those. And I was like, oh man, cigarettes are way better.
You're like, I can't wait to be a middle-aged black guy.
Yeah. Put the Kangol on.
One of the cigarettes I smoked in high school was Cool XLs, which is, I don't know why I did that. I think I was like possessed by the spirit of a 68-year-old black guy.
I remember we used to smoke Camel Ys, which I for some reason liked because they felt meatier to me, which is some psychology going on.
Filled
there.
Up your mouth.
but I really, I think they sort of, those went the way of like the Dorito 3D and like the novelty. Like the original was good enough, but yeah, man, cigs fucking rule.
Winston packs rich tobacco, specially selected and specially processed for good flavor in filter smoking.
Yeah, Barney, Winston tastes good like a cigarette. Chug.
Well, I mean, I'm glad we kicked off the episode talking about gooning, jacking off, things of that nature, because this provides the perfect segue to how I wanted to bring up the latest developments in the ongoing murder-suicide pact between the United States and Israel. I'm wondering if you guys saw, okay, look, we covered on this show the IDF semen retrieval unit. Correct, Grace. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with the IDF, the semen squad.
Yeah, you're talking to a fucking master sergeant right here. What are you talking about? Yeah. So I, you know, a lot of listeners of this show and my show probably know that, you know, I lived in Israel for about 15 years, and yeah, I did my military service, and they let you choose when you have a particularly high aptitude for, and I'll be honest with you guys, sucking dick. I was able to test into the unit that did it. And yeah, like I'm going to be honest, it's people know that, you know, you stiffen, there's rigor mortis. The testicles are swirling like a newborn sun for hours after
it's
death.
Boiling, so boiling, yeah. with activity.
I cannot count the amount of times I've rappelled into a scene that is just basically a charnel house and just got
it's
right
a hot
down
LZ.
There on all fours, like a dog, put some peanut butter on that fucking thing and just got it in, spit into a cup.
Well, I learned right after that there's another IDF sort of cock hunting unit. This is from an Israeli government minister named Shlomo Carly. He said this is a quote he put out on Twitter.
Can they stop with the Shlomo name?
Gotta stop calling it Shlomo.
Like, guys, please stop. Like, there is no other race doing this stuff.
Nobody does that, man.
You're like daring people to say something. Like, can you please stop?
It's so, I don't know. Maybe I can't describe this well enough, but it's, for some reason, to me, strikes me as the most Jewish thing to basically name yourself a slur.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's like a way to get you yelled at without conditions.
So sick. But I like the name Shlomo. Anyway, Shlomo's.
Well, here's what he says. This is a statement he put out on Twitter. David added 100 Philistine foreskins as revenge for plugging the wells with dirt. Our fighters who went to war for the house and to take revenge for the terrible massacre carried out by the Nazi terrorists will cover them in their tunnels with dirt and will return to peace with the abductees only after they have cut off all these cursed foreskins. So to that, I simply have to say, come and take them. Come and take them. But then I thought about half a second, and they're going to have a harder time finding foreskins in the Gaza Strip than they did finding the fucking underground terror headquarters. Fucking Muslims get circumcised. What the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah, they seem to not have any Arabic speakers or really to know even like basic facts about
Islam.
Basic
facts, yeah. They're right next to. And it's just like, what the fuck? Are you invading Denmark now? Like, I mean, that would be funny if they just started, they took all the foreskins from Dutch people.
I was going to say, I feel like the most foreskinned peoples are the Northern Europeans.
Yeah.
Like, but I feel like kind of everyone else gave up on them a while ago. I don't really know if they're rocking with foreskins in Asia. I assume they
definitely
might be.
Are.
Yeah, I think they're rocking with them, but
it's the majority of the world, Bryce.
Do they just have like a guy, like a Bugs Bunny style guy go down there and just go...
But like, what is it like? I mean, I simply must stress, when government ministers are talking about waging war on the foreskins of the enemies, this is a normal country engaged in what is essentially self-defense against an existential threat. And just please keep that in mind when you hear news in the coming weeks about the cocks they're sucking of dead guys.
I just don't really like the thing with Israel is like, listen. It's not like Judaism doesn't make a lot of sense. And so like when you start like drawing, I mean, like lessons or not lessons, excuse me. Like when you start kind of like using your rhetoric for a modern war, it's like from the history, it gets, I think, a little uncomfortable for a lot of people. But like, I feel like if they had guys that were just slightly less weird in charge of their communications, I think they'd be doing a lot better now. But like, there's not like one guy that comes out on the Israel side, gives a press conference or does one of these like, you know, CNN spots or whatever, that is anything like approaching a normal person. Like they're
not
all
even
fucking
close.
No,
freaks.
No.
And you know what, Brace? I mean, like the names are a big part of it. The names and their stupid accent. Cause like when I see someone like talking to me and with the dumbest accent imaginable, their name is like Glav Gud or something. Mm-hmm. I'm inclined to believe what this guy has to say. I feel like one of the major Israeli spokespeople right now is a woman named Aviva Klompas.
Yeah. She's rough.
Aviva Klompas is rough. I like to go around my house saying her name to the tune of Despacito. Aviva Klompas. But there is a problem with trying to retrofit Judaism into like a modern warrior culture, because you only have like one guy who won a war.
Yeah.
In like the entire, but like everything else is like, you know, here's a time we were taken hostage by this guy. Here's a time that like the guy taking us hostage got killed, but not by us, but by a Persian guy. It's really just like David. Like Solomon is cool, but he didn't really win any wars. He was just he had a lot of concubines, and
he won a war on single mothers.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But like a conventional military style combat war, that's only David, and that's so far back that he had his slingshot.
When they were fighting the Philistines and everyone else and their enemies in that era, circumcision was the thing that distinguished you from them.
Yeah.
But like now it's just like I don't know where this shit comes from. I mean, I think it's just like they've lived in such a hermetically sealed hothouse of their own minds and like the phantoms that they project to entertain themselves that, like, as we said many times before on the show, they don't know how they sound to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And they don't know very basic facts about the people that they claim are now like the Third Reich. Because, we've seen another round this week of Hamas is worse than the Nazis.
Yeah.
Or presents a greater threat to world to the world population of Jewish people than the Third Reich did.
I feel like Israel, their connection with the American Jewish community has a lot to be desired. But for the fact that they're not connecting that the ancient Jewish fight against the Philistines to the modern Jewish fight against the modern Philistines in Hollywood, to me, has just been a complete missed opportunity.
I mean, in general, I think like it's not just the Israelis, but it's like, Israel advocates, both amateur and professional, who live in America, who have totally lost the plot of how they sound to other people. Because, like, the foreskin thing, bizarre, obviously. But on the American side of Hasbara things, I remember there being less, in public, vivid fantasies about rape in Zionism. Yeah. Like, say, it was never good, but like they didn't do that, during Bush. They didn't just like randomly pick out a college student who is like Free Palestine and be like, here's 10 paragraphs on how you would be raped in Gaza. That, like, I feel like they have all comprehensively just lost it.
No, they go to the rape thing immediately. Like, if you just like dispassionately say that, like, just state where the majority of public opinion is on the issue of ceasefire, then you get these lurid fantasies about rape and whatnot, which is especially funny given that we're now in the middle of, like, 24 hours left in this pause to accommodate a hostage exchange between the two sides. And you're getting to see the contrast between the hostages that Hamas let go and are all leaving being like, have fun. Have a great summer. See you in the fall. The teenagers that they're letting out of Israeli prisons look like the come and see boy, and they're about the same age.
Yeah, it's been interesting too to see how the Palestinian prisoners or hostages are portrayed in American media too. Because I mean, it's not exactly like a secret the way that like Israeli military detention works. I mean, there's been a lot of writing about it, articles about it, scholarship about it. It's like a well-known thing that, like, you can basically just be arrested in the occupied territories and just have your detention indefinitely extended every 6 months. A lot of these people never got a trial, never been convicted of anything.
A lot of them were like 12 when they were arrested.
Yeah.
For, correct, like throwing a stone at a border guard or something like that.
Yeah. Or even, I'm going to be honest, like, some people, even if they, whatever, did something, The way that they're portrayed, it's like these people are raised from the second they're born to hate us and to kill and to hate every Jew, to want to kill every Jew. And so, like, there's no such thing as a child. That's another weird thing that you always see.
Well, they
from
keep
these
saying kids. Persons under the age of 18.
Yes.
And, like, whenever they talk about the hostage exchange, they're like, Hamas is giving up women and children in exchange for Palestinian prisoners under the age of 18.
Yeah, but it's an exchange for women and children. And, you know, it's just one of the talking points that I keep seeing from the Israeli side is that, like, it's kind of quibbling with the idea of a child. And, like,
yeah,
you know, the age of, like, what is a child? It's, like, getting lower and lower and lower and lower.
Yeah.
And some, the more honest ones are just, like, it doesn't really matter if they're a child. Like, they're going to grow up into an adult that, like, hates us and wants us to die. So, like, what's the difference between killing them now and killing them later? It's been really something to watch. And it's really never a good sign that you're winning. It's never a sign, rather, that you're winning the rhetorical battle when you're, like, really quibbling on, like, whether a 15-year-old is a child or an adult.
No, definitely not. It seems like a huge portion of the child hostages that Israel takes are from the West Bank, which is, I feel like people are realizing it more, certainly more than in previous years. But Western audiences are starting to maybe scratch the surface of the kind of, like, complete degradation and misery that goes on there. People more or less get what Gaza is now, but the West Bank was, I mean, it's so indefensible just for the standpoint of, like, what a modern country is on the Israeli side. It's so indefensible to Western audiences that, like, they just wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, it is essentially governed by, like, a clan type body guarded and aided by the military. And it's like, yeah, I would be shocked if, like, you know, like, they didn't stab some of those guys, you know, like, that's just talk about asking for it. But, like, I did see that they arrested, like, 116 people in the West Bank in the last week.
And they've released 117. And I have a strong suspicion that they're just going to rearrest all the people that they released this week. Probably.
Yeah, there's nothing stopping them from doing that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, they're released, but then they're released into the West Bank, which, like, Gaza is basically also a prison that there's no escape from. Like, where are you going to go? Like, this hostage exchange is brutally unpopular in Israel. They hate it. Because they feel that they're, like, we're coughing up stuff in exchange for, like, Filipino guest workers. I mean, I've seen it described in that term, in those terms. But Felix, your point about the West Bank and how, like, it's better just not to talk about it. I have noticed that, like Richie Torres is a good example of this. Like, there are surrogates in the American media and government who are now in this, like, frantic dash to, because, like, they feel the need that they have to counter every narrative or fact or opinion that they come across in the media or on social media that makes them angry, that paints Israel in a negative light. And in their mad rush to sort of, like, reactively try to counter every bit of messaging that they find inappropriate, they end up drawing attention to things like Jewish-only roads in the West Bank.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Richie Torres was like, you know, Jewish checkpoints are about as real as Jewish space lasers. And then, like, in the course of having to correct himself or, like, explain himself, he's just like, Well, it is true that Palestinians can't drink water in certain zones because it's illegal. Or, you know, it's just like they keep confirming things that are wildly out of step with, like, what the average American knows about what's commonplace and accepted as fact in Israel.
Did you see with the Richie Torres thing that one of the guys who yelled at him for that?
The head of J Street.
Yes. Yeah, the head of J Street, who is, like, he's one of those, like, 78-year-old Israelis who belongs to a party whose name translates to good morning.
Yeah.
He is, like, the perfect good morning voter. He's 78-year-old Ashkenazi who, you know, has more bodies than tobacco, but now tries to lead a workshop for Palestinian and Jewish kindergartners in the city of Lod. And he was like, How dare you say that I'm defaming Israel by acknowledging the Jewish checkpoints? My grandfathers were all terrorists.
Yeah,
they were all in the Irgun.
my great grandfather murdered the UN, the UN ambassador or whatever, not the ambassador, whatever, Bernadette Falk. Torres and the Hakeem Jeffries, the watermelon Palestinian flag, bullshit thing too was really similar, because you know he made this like big stink that there was a picture of a watermelon on the a slice of watermelon rather on a flyer that was protesting him, when you know that actually allows people to call attention to the fact that like yeah flying the Palestinian flag is illegal, and so or in many parts of the area. And so, like, yeah.
Hence the watermelon symbol.
The watermelon
slices. The flag itself is illegal. Yeah. And the colors are the same.
But it doesn't matter. Like, Richie Torres is, I mean, he's the fucking man. But, like, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, I if I was one of his constituents, I would be a little confused over why he has, like, basically spent his career jumping from Sean McElwee's fucking, you know, ample teat and like cryptocurrency to becoming, you know, the congressman from Tel Aviv. But it's
I mean, he's doing a great job at counter messaging the Zionist propaganda.
Like these guys are like it's so, and I don't know what's so different about it now. Like I can't really put my finger on why. And I really hesitate to ascribe it just to like social media stuff. But like it has been, you know, it's an uphill battle for people in favor of Palestine for a long time, at least in my lifetime. And part of that has been because the Israeli propaganda apparatus is so sophisticated, or at least so moneyed and so all encompassing. And I feel like it has definitely not been like even its own defenders are sort of shooting themselves in the foot by saying all this outrageous shit.
I think that like part of it, and yeah, I wouldn't ascribe it entirely to social media, though I do think it's, I don't know, it's at least been valuable with making younger people very aware of it in a way that probably previous generations weren't. I think that a large part of like the just total collapse of the propaganda machine and like the seeming never ending like own goals of just like alienating everyone by acting incredibly weird and talking about these incredibly lurid fantasies. I think it's sort of similar to what we saw with the military over there, which is it's the most perfect, well-oiled machine in the world until the second they face any adversity.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the story about the Israeli tank girls who defended the kibbutz? And like they were promoting this on Israeli TV. And they were like, okay, once again, Felix, this is your joke. Both of them were commanders and they were like 19 and 20 years old.
Yeah.
Had never been in a tank, didn't know anything about it. And they were ordered by their commanders to just get in, you know, pilot the Ava and just raise the fucking kibbutzes and then like just shoot shells into houses. And they were like, yeah, we didn't know if there were civilians or there. We were there to destroy the terrorists. And it's just like, at a time in which there has like been quite a bit of like serious media reporting in the Israeli press, especially about how many of the October 7th numbers were killed by the Israeli military. And they're promoting this story about these teenagers who just hopped in a tank and started blasting in a combat zone full of civilians. It doesn't like, I mean, why are they drawing attention to that? Because they think it's a cool story about like teenage girls rising up to fight.
Can we talk a little bit about how like Israel has the most like 19-year-old officers out of any military on earth?
Because I didn't really realize this until you pointed it out, Felix. But I keep seeing like when they show like the like soldiers who have been killed in the ongoing military operations, they're like, yeah, Brigadier General Glav Kompass, 17 years old. It's just like they got a real officer inflation going on there.
Because having like an officer heavy military is like classically one of the things that kind of makes like a bad sclerotic army. And so like, it's just, I'm like, how, I mean, I guess they put that out there to show that like, you know, even though they didn't know how to use the tank or like any of the rules of engagement, like what to do if you're in like a, you know, if you're fighting against
firefight,
people on foot in a firefight in a tank, they just got in there and they just started blasting. Like these ladies are heroes. And it's like, if you think about it for 2 seconds, it's like, wait a minute, if you put me in a tank or whatever, well, but like if you, like, you don't know, you have to like, when there's civilians there, it's like, how the fuck are you going to know through like a tank's sights who is who in that? And so if you're just like blowing up houses, like it's, I mean, maybe that's just how the
well, you
Israeli
say that,
military,
Grace, but the Merkava does come equipped with a Hulu.com civilian spotter.
So it sort of does
all the work for you.
And their whole thing is like that they're the most moral army in the world, which is true. They do make anybody who wants to be an officer can be an officer within 3 days. But it's like, it's also, I never really understood that line. I guess it's because they're like, we could kill everybody, but
we could kill everyone, but we don't.
We have nuclear bombs and we haven't.
Yeah.
But it's like, they're sending these, like, don't do that. I mean, they should send those ladies into Gaza. I think. I mean, these are heroes.
I think that, like, I've seen like a battery of 20-year-old lieutenants and a 27-year-old. I saw a 27-year-old captain, a fucking captain. Like, what is going on here? I've seen a lot of that, and a lot of them are women. And I was thinking back to you remember the idea of Oaf, who led that the tour of the Hamas headquarters inside the hospital. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I did a little research on that guy. That guy is an admiral.
an admiral?
Yeah. That guy's a fucking admiral.
They're giving him the grunt work that should be going to a guy peeling fucking potatoes to do
they
that
got the
dog
admiral
of an assignment.
Giving the Shifa tour?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So he's an admiral. He was the leader of their version of the SEALs, and he commanded the entire like Israeli SEAL program. Different word for it, but basically the same thing. And they transferred him from the Otter Division to be the head of the spokesperson unit.
Well, that's what's really that's what they got to send best and brightest.
Yeah, because like the Israeli military is so weird. It runs like a front business, but I was trying to figure out why they would do this, because it's like, okay, a commander of like an amphibious special operations unit is, you know, you've spent tens of millions of dollars on training just this guy. He's he has ostensibly like a very specialized and desired set of skills. You would probably want him, you know, in your version of CENTCOM or whatever. But I think their entire strategy now with IDF spokespeople is they want them to have a ton of decorations and have really impressive ranks. So I think that these girls who were like, you know, not even 21 years old and were leading, they were like commanding officers for dozens of people. I think that like the military just assumed they would never be in a war again. So they were like, okay, if you're a telegenic girl, we'll make you a commissioned officer, and we'll fast track you through all these things, because like you're never gonna like actually have to go into combat. And one day you'll make amazing spokespeople, and you'll have these just a uniform bursting with commendations. And
yeah.
And the result is the two girls who burned down the kibbutz. With their fucking tank.
It's I remember reading this like New York Times, you know, one of those like long things they put out after something crazy happens. We're like, this is like the moment by moment of how the October 7th attack happened. It was pretty recently after, so there wasn't a ton of stuff in there, but there was one description about Hamas attacking a Israeli military outpost right by the Gaza Strip. And this is presumably, you know, it should be a pretty rough and ready outfit there. You know what I mean? Like people who are
right. They're the tip of the spear. They're right there at the perimeter of security.
Exactly. Like there is a, you know, this group of 40,000, 30,000 men under arms in, you know, very close to us. Like we need to be, we're like the first line of defense, you know, against Israel when these unwashed masses come out of the walls or whatever. And I remember reading at one point, like there's a description, and this is taken from, what the New York Times said was a Hamas GoPro, of these like soldiers cowering underneath a desk. And I'm like, you're underneath it. Like you're a soldier. Like you should be like fighting the guys that are in your base. But I didn't understand, like, do they not have people on watch? Like, is there not a guy? You try to go to any military base in America, and there's like 40 guys standing at the gate who are like going to give you a hard time or whatever. It's like, do they not just have like one dude on a roof, just like looking to see if there's cars coming? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what is
it's like that is the cost of like them truly believing that they could run like a low cost, totally automated occupation forever. You know, like
in one of the propaganda hits I saw, Bryce, I think it was referring to the incident you talked about. They were like, you know, Master Sergeant Tov Huld, age 20, like, you know, like gave his life in defense of like 90 of his fellow soldiers who were hiding under a bed.
Yeah. And it's like, no disrespect, no disrespect.
I mean,
you know,
yeah,
to anybody ever.
I would be hiding under a bed too. Like, I mean,
It's like 100 years ago, you would have been shot by like a like corpulent Frenchman for doing what you did. Like, this is not.
Yeah.
Like,
you were a character in a Celine
you'd be executed
book.
For cowardice, bro. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Ronald
soldier.
I mean, like, I read something like that, and it does make me feel some sort of sympathy with the Israelis, because I'd be like, yeah, that's what I'd be doing as well.
Ronald Spears, like, before he got to Easy Company, shot a sergeant for doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of Spears' legend.
It's like, it doesn't really track. And, like, I've been a little confused about some of their behavior in Gaza as well. Obviously, like, I am very cautious about, like, you know, drawing a lot of conclusions from, like, combat footage or whatever, you know, usually because, you know, you'll see a snippet or whatever. You can't really
see
a
pinhole glimpse of, it's hard to understand the context for how, you know, successful these operations actually are.
But, like, it is difficult for me to understand Israeli combat tactics in some ways that, like, don't involve... I very much understand just leveling every building. That seems pretty straightforward. Like, okay, we're just going to kill everybody in this area and destroy their homes and there's nothing left. But then, like, to just have, like, five tanks, like, kind of, like, slowly going down a street with no infantry outside, and then just like, you know, the leaving equipment places for it to get burned. It doesn't really, maybe it's just a more moral way to fight a war. You know, this is, I guess, the IDF strategy, but it really does not make sense to me. It's not even from like a way to limit civilian casualties. It's nothing to do with that. It just is like, as an army, it doesn't, I don't think that they're as good as it. It kind of really just seems like all the fucking, like, Egypt and Jordan and Syria, like, all their armies in the 60s and 70s must have just fucking sucked ass, because these guys are not good at fighting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do believe that the IDF was a very competent military at one point. They were very good at conventional warfare and things like, you know, signals intelligence and all that shit, but nothing can withstand prolonged self-perceived invincibility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that probably has something to do with it. I mean, also the people were kind of frequently fighting in wars back then. There was like a lot of experience to draw from, and most of the experience that like a lot of the people in the IDF have now, it's just like shooting a guy in a wheelchair during the Great March of Return.
The previous, well, I mean, several generations ago, but the upper command of the IDF at one time were these guys who had served in the Red Army and were there at like Stalingrad.
Yeah,
they like lost a limb there. There are these fucking grizzled guys with eye patches. And now their army is filled with literally, like, their NCOs are TV producers and, like, chefs.
Yeah.
I think a good indication of what we're talking about is all the accounts I've read about quad drone copters outfitted with sniper rifles just shooting people who walk out of a hospital. Because, like, obviously, sniping as a military tactic is, like, one of the most, you know, cowardly and evil ways of prosecuting a war.
Fully agreed.
You know, you're like half a mile away when you pink miss some dude through a fucking telescopic lens. But, you know, at least like being an actual sniper is like, that's a very, you know, that's a pretty cool skill. I think we can all agree, even if it is evil and cowardly. And like, at some point you are still like a man pulling the trigger. But like, sniping people with drones is just a whole other level of cowardice.
It's because of ADHD. It's the ADHD epidemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like you sort of like the time in which they really accelerated the drone assassinations, I think it's important to see what preceded it. And to me, the biggest thing that may have spurred on really just accelerating everything into being done by drones or helicopters is when they tried to assassinate Khalid Mishal, the one-time leader of Hamas in Jordan. I don't think I've talked about this on the show, but in 1999, they tried to do, you know, the type of assassination that they would have maybe probably pulled off in the 1970s. They went to the headquarters of Hamas in Jordan at the time, and they went to the then leader of Hamas. They had two guys standing outside to, you know, stand watch, then two guys in the headquarters who were dressed up like tourists. And they got up really close to him. And instead of, like, I don't know, pulling out a gun or stabbing him or something, they pull out this weird device that shot, like, aerosolized fentanyl into his ear. And then tried to run out of the headquarters, and of course got, like, captured by this guy's bodyguards, and even the lookouts got captured. And it was this huge debacle for Mossad and for Israel, because, like, you know, obviously the King of Jordan had to be like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
What are you doing? And they successfully ransomed the agents for several Palestinian prisoners and an antidote for the poison that they used, which I really think it was just aerosolized fentanyl.
So sick.
But, like, it's like
the Narcan, the Hamas dude.
Yeah. When you try to break it down, it's so funny and so poorly thought out, because it's like, what would, like, in your ideal situation, that plays out the best way it possibly could. And what does that even look like? Like, do you go in there, hey, we're the guys with the evil device, it's ear day.
Yeah.
And then the Hamas guys are like, oh, yeah, no, go ahead, guy I've never seen before. Put that evil thing in my ear. Spray me. And then they just peacefully leave while that guy's throwing up and dying. Like, it just, I think this collapse has been happening for a long time, but we weren't able to see it because, you know, they were mostly beating up on a captive and, you know, mostly child population. And that still is the case, but Hamas has certainly, like, grown in capabilities in that time.
If I could refocus from Israel's defenders on the front lines, I'd like to talk a bit about the one incident from the past week about Israel's most prominent defender here on the home front. And by home front, I mean New York City. And I'm talking, of course, about the incredible saga of Stuart Seldowitz this week.
So
friends in immigration.
Really? Okay, go, yeah.
And to the Egyptian, the Muhabarat wants your picture.
Okay, yeah, let's go.
Yeah? You know the Muhabarat?
Hmm?
The Muhabarat.
No, I don't know.
You don't know?
I just speak English.
No?
Yeah, go, yeah.
Muhabarat in Egypt will get your parents.
Go.
Does your father like his fingernails? They'll take them out one by one.
I mean, like, okay, so on the home front, there's been a sort of a propaganda war, at least in New York City, about, like, ripping down the missing posters. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, we've covered this. They're put up to be taken down and to create a viral video.
Yes.
Thus far, every single attempt to create a viral video has blown up in these people's faces, because they've been able to produce evidence of nothing other than the unflappability of New Yorkers and their unwillingness to knuckle under to their bullshit threats and, you know, I'm scared style cry bullying. But in the process, have revealed all of themselves to be, like, psychopathically unpleasant, and none more so than Stuart Seldowitz. And a guy was like, I saw that video when I woke up and I was like, Jesus, this is revolting. Like, I mean, this is just, they're really letting the hate out. But, you know, it's to be expected. An hour later, when I find out that this guy has served in three different administrations in the State Department, and then in the State Department, in the Department for Israel-Palestine Affairs, and was, like, presided over the Dayton Accords and shit, and was a guy threatening a halal cart vendor with the Egyptian secret police torturing his family to death, and said of Palestinian children, if we killed 4,000, we didn't kill enough. It's just like, and just like the sadistic look on that guy's face was something else. And he, like I said, he really has provided a face of the, Israel's fans in the United States.
Well, it was so funny too, because I read some like kind of more in-depth article about it, I think on City and State or whatever. And it has a little interview with him where he talks about, like, yeah, you know, like, I didn't know it would be a big thing. Like, I walk by this halal cart guy, like, every day. He's Egyptian. So, I asked him if he condemned Hamas. And, like, you know, he refused.
Normal. Yeah. What's so insane about that is that, like, okay, we've since found out that this guy has been doing this, not just to halal cart vendors, but to, like, Russian diplomats outside the UN for, like, a year or so. He was approaching a Russian ambassador and calling his wife a wife or coworker a whore, threatening Jesus. His dog, like, and with the halal cart guy. I mean, I think the thing that's so psychopathic about this is obviously this guy is, like, torqued up to the mm-hmm. nth degree thinking about killing Palestinians, and he just wants to argue with someone and just let out the hate. express the evil and the poison inside him. But nobody in his social circle is even slightly sympathetic to Palestinians. So he's like, oh, and of course, he's too much of a coward to like confront someone at a protest. So he's like, oh, I'll know what I'll do. I'll go to the halal cart guy.
A guy in like a metal quizzing box, him. Can't
yeah.
leave.
Yeah. yeah.
Just start quizzing yeah. him on what he thinks about Hamas. And yo, respect to the halal cart guy who in the videos is just absolutely refuses to rise to the, like, he refused yeah. to be baited every fucking time. And he just says, yeah. I don't speak English.
there's a lot of weird stuff about this guy. But don't you think it's interesting how this guy was like, he was the acting head of the National Security Council at one point. Like, he's had a bunch of very
high profile positions.
He's had
yeah.
these huge jobs. And then you look at his employment history and it's like yeah. all the jobs I applied to immediately after I graduated yeah. undergrad.
Yeah, it's like he sells fucking insurance now.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm not saying this to like excuse him, but it's like, do you think he like hit his head or something?
You know what I think he is? I look at that smile and that sort of like inability to perceive even the most basic of like public social norms. I think the guy's a fucking lush. I think he's a drunk.
I think he's spending
all day drinking in his house. And I think that's why he can't get a job in national security or whatever the fuck he does anymore, is because he can't stop hitting the bottle.
Yeah, it's just so weird because it's like, if you have a high, like, not even working for the federal government, if you have a high enough, like, position in, like, municipal or state government, you can carve out, like, a pretty lucrative path for yourself in private industry.
Work at Brookings, even.
Yeah, yeah, you could, if you've done, like, 30, 40 years of, you know, quote-unquote public service, at a very high level, your floor is like $350,000 a year.
Yeah.
And this guy is like, he's like selling fucking Amway products.
Yeah. He's a like, bum.
Maybe the reason he knows these halal cart guys so well is because the only lunch he can afford in the city.
Yeah. That's what he's splurging.
Well, day. Brace, another like sort of exhibit A in the alcoholism case here and why he's not getting hired for any new national security jobs is that he also sued the government in a case that went to the Supreme Court and he lost because the inspector general hit him and his wife up for the fact that they overcharged the government by something like twice what their rent was when he was stationed in like, you know, France or something. So, like, yeah, he got in trouble with the inspector general for ripping off the government for overcharging the rent he was paying, took the case to the Supreme Court and lost.
I got to tell you, man, there's been a few things like this being one of them that have happened during this, you know, past, I guess, almost couple months that have made me be like, why do we do this sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them was that in like a week after October 7th, the Free Press, Barry Weiss's outlet, had like 10 articles on why, you know, we have to like, you know, go in and circumcise all the Gazans or whatever. And the only article that wasn't about Israel Palestine was one complaining that you have to tip too many places now. And I was like, I took a screenshot of the homepage and I'm like, who do I even send this to? You know what I mean? Like, this is, oh, it made me, it's just like, this is not good for us. Then another one, it's like Seldowitz's break from with the federal government being that he and his wife were just like doing rental fraud on the government. It's like,
yeah,
come on, guy. Do we have to do this? Like, yeah, couldn't you have been like smuggling fentanyl or something over there? Like, why do we always have to be doing this kind of shit?
Yeah, there's a lot of the pro-Israel side has trotted out a bunch of like, you can really only describe them as like Fagin-esque characters.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's like they'll bring out a guy and they'll be like, oh yeah, you think it's cool to support Palestine? Here's like a petty criminal from 19th century London who waters down his soup to scam children. And it's like, can we fucking stop? Can we this?
You remember like a couple weeks ago, there was like the Instagram thing, would you hide me?
Yes.
Remember
that? Like,
yes. Would you hide me? The equivalent would be if they like,
would you
they
hide were, me like, was
if,
crazy.
If someone put out like, they were like a big article, they were like, yes, I will hide you, but here's the sliding scale on the rent I'm going to be charging in my attic.
Would you hide me? It was so funny. There's been a few things like that that just like have not taken off. Like you can tell that someone's God. Like, this is about to be fucking viral. But
we keep talking about this over and over about how none of these things take off. But what took off is the grotesque visage of Stuart Seldowitz's like satanic smirk attacking some fucking innocent halal cart vendor, which is like in New York City is the equivalent of like attacking Santa Claus.
Basically. Actually, you know what? Let's rewind a bit. You know how you were saying that, you know, we can't put like the decline in the Israeli PR machine's ability on one thing and, you know, we're loath to attribute it mostly to social media. I think a very underrated thing, especially for young people and for people who previously didn't have an opinion on this stuff, was seeing the unfiltered conduct of pro-Israel people and Israelis themselves. Like, there was a trending thing on TikTok where these awful Israelis were making fun of people in Gaza for not having water. And it's like kids see that. Like they see that and are instantly disgusted. You can't blame anyone for seeing exactly how you're behaving and making a decision.
Like I'm saying, like it's so clear. Like in the face of the largest anti-war movement since the Iraq War, ongoing acts of civil disobedience in New York and elsewhere, led by Jewish peace groups. It is so clear, like with the missing posters or everything they do to try to rile people up at protests. Like they want so bad to be able to point to something that says like this movement of Palestinian solidarity is about just unbridled Jew hatred. They want just one person saying, kill all the Jews, gas them or something like that. And the only thing they've been able to come up with is evidence of their own revolting, psychopathically hateful and racist behavior captured on video and shared immediately to the entire public.
Well, I went to this march, like I guess last week, that was the Hakeem Jeffries one. And it was like a lot of people with kids, like more than I've seen at most protests. And maybe it's because of where it was, but like there was like a lot of people with strollers and little kids with them. And it was like kind of like a somber vibe, but like a good vibe. And then there's one guy, the one counter protester, in an all over Israeli flag print hoodie, like very like smoke shop hoodie that you'd buy in fucking Tel Aviv or whatever. Holding a picture of a swastika that he had torn in half, but there was still just a swastika on one side of the paper. The other half was this kind of just like a blank sheet of paper.
So it looked like he was just holding up a swastika.
Kind of. Yeah. And like screaming in the manner of, I would say, the most like far gone crackhead that you could imagine. Like I could not make out a word.
Stimulant-induced madness.
Completely. I mean, the guy was zooted out of his mind on just love for Israel. And it was strange because it was this scene where there was just like a lot of people with little kids and like the little kids spoke at the little rally thing. It was very quiet. There was like candles and shit. And then they just had this guy going, no ceasefire! Like screaming at the top of his lungs, walking up and down.
Yeah, no, I mean, we talked about it earlier on in this, how it was such a big monumental thing that these, you know, obviously the numbers, seeing tens of thousands of people come out in like even places like fucking San Antonio for Palestine was this unprecedented thing in America. But also that, like, you know, just having like happy, cute families on the pro-Palestine thing was this huge thing that I personally never really expected. Definitely not now. And then, like, you know, compare the nice smiling families and young people to the guy screaming with the swastika.
Yeah. Or like fucking Richie Torres. You know what I mean? Like I'm struggling to think of like one hitter that they have that you're like, ooh, that's a good one. They got that.
The seventh fucking writer on Borat 2.
Exactly. Some fucking wrote for Borat.
You know, the Oscar nominated among 13 other people for this up for that award for just his
Sacha Baron Cohen too. That is another
fuck
one.
Fuck him.
Gotta go. Gotta go.
The only terrorism Sacha Baron Cohen ever inspired with his fucking with his little minstrel act was from ultra orthodox Jews who tried to kill him for being gay.
Yeah. Well, he also, I mean, he set this one guy up.
Yeah, yeah. Like this Palestinian dude, yeah,
as being a terrorist or whatever. He's just such a fuck. I mean, it's been a long time since Ali G, my brother.
Yeah.
But it's like, what are they got the fucking Borat rider. They got that fucking, who's the bald fucking guy? You know what I'm talking about?
Arson.
Bart Gellman.
Gellman. Oh, yeah. What a number that guy is. Jesus.
Sacha Baron Cohen has been, I mean, I can't even believe that they're, I mean, I guess I can, because like in their calculus, he's, you know, made these very popular movies and everyone sees him as a very funny guy. And Borat 1 was hilarious. Borat 2, I don't remember.
Terrible.
I think
sucked.
It was complete ass.
Well, I may have written for it. I may have been the 50th writer on that who also won an Oscar. So let's not say that. But
it was pretty good.
But his like entire act with Borat is like, hey everyone, I'm the Muslim who rapes his sister. And since like 2017, he's done this weepy shit about fucking anti-Semitism. And before this, it was like crying about Facebook. He was one of those guys. Now he's crying about TikTok. And it's like, at any point, do you think about what you've done in your career at all?
Damn, fucking Lee Kern. That's the guy.
Yeah.
Lee Kern isn't even, if you look at IMDb, it's like writers and it, you know, it lists a few and then you click for more. He's not even one of the few that's like on the top.
Oof.
That's gotta hurt.
Well, like I said, I mean, in these huge protest movements that are going on right now, like, it's just, they have to find a way to say that all the normal families and people and like 70% of public opinion is that of like the Third Reich.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they're marching to like, you know, under the banner of just anti-Semitic, like barbaric Jew hatred. And the thing is, they've completely failed to do that. And it's not going to stop them from trying, but like in their, like I said, it's back to the Richie Torres thing. In their frantic and reactive attempts to just try to say anything, they only betray how absolutely unpleasant and just really like morally repulsive their side of this equation is. It's really something to behold.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're it's completely fucking, oh, look, Brandon Wardell thanked on Borat 2. Interesting. sorry, just going. Just
looks
going
like we through. Found the real Filipino guest worker.
just going, like, it's just, they don't, I'm like, don't you guys have somebody, you know what I mean? Like, don't you guys have like a Sydney Sweeney you can hit us with, or like somebody who that young people will like, or that normal people will like, you know, who can like break it down for everybody and be like, hey, actually, like, Jews are kind of like George Floyd and Hamas.
Yeah,
they're the police or whatever. You know, it's like, can't you guys? They don't have anyone like that. Yeah.
And Michael Rappaport.
Michael Rappaport. These old, leering, fucking, unfunny freaks.
Michael Rappaport's like 70 years old. And he's posting shit like, hey, yo, if you don't get called racist at least once a day on the Twitter, you fucking up, bro.
Yo, the five pillars of hip-hop are the Merkava Tank, Golani Brigade, expanded settlements, calling out anti-Semitism at the UN, and B-boy.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, these fucking dumbasses, right? Their whole thing, and it is like, they're like, you know, Israel comes out every other day and says, New York Times, Hamas. UN, yeah. Hamas. Like, all these things, Hamas. And it's like, anybody, I mean, I granted, like, I'm not sure that anybody is looking at that like, hey, I don't think New York Times is Hamas that didn't already like think that maybe Israel is very stupid. But like, who are you appealing to there? Like, besides like the most like dumb fuck, either like already very pro like Israel Zionist type of people or like conservatives, which I think is like a big part. I mean, for most of my lifetime, I don't know, most of my lifetime, but for a good deal of my lifetime, Israel has been governed by a right wing government. And for most of recent history, it has been a very far right wing government. Right now, it's an extremely,
by the standards of any Western country.
Yes.
Extremely right wing.
Absolutely. And so like their whole thing is like, we're gay too or whatever. Like it like falls flat in the face of like what their government is and advertises itself as. And so they try to do this thing where they, they try to make this propaganda that appeals to everybody. Like, this is a liberal democratic state. Okay, well, you just had these huge protests that were in the news for like the past year because fucking Netanyahu and his wife accepted pink champagne from a former IDF spy who lives in fucking LA as a bribe. You know, and James Packer fucking moved to your country. And, you know, it's like these, there's been these big protests because he's like trying to overhaul the judicial system because you're fucking, you know, the guy who's in, the leader of your country is like pretty clearly implicated in some damning bribery cases. And like is a, what I guess you would call like a Trump-like figure. You know what I mean? Like there's sort of a vulgar idiot. Although I think Netanyahu's kind of smooth in some ways, but like I don't understand like the appeal that they think they could make to like a lot of the young people that they think they're losing, because it's like the reality of Israel is that they have a right-wing racist government that is open and proud of it. They make these occasional statements or whatever. They're like, oh, we love all people. Like it's all brother. We're all brothers or whatever here. But like then they'll just go and say like, but we got to cut off some of these guys, the tip of their cocks or whatever.
Yeah, we got
to
do some foreskin hunting. Sacha Cohen should do, he should do an Ali G interview with like Smotrich or Ben-Gavir.
Yes.
And just sort of wrap it up with them and be like, yo, but what is the best way to spit on a woman, bruv?
But it's like, if you're somebody like Sacha Baron Cohen, right, who I'm sure is a good liberal in so many fucking ways or whatever, and like, don't you feel shame in what you're defending? Well, you know, like, don't you feel like even, you know, I'm this big pro-Israel guy. It's like, well, you're defending an Israel that exists in your mind instead of the Israel as it exists now. And I think that the Israel that exists now is the one that people are viewing and grappling with and dealing with. Instead of like this is real that we get sold by these fucking propagandists.
Yeah, I think to your point about like Israel having an incredibly right wing government and how like that sort of destroys all the previous generational arguments about Israel being like, you know, this standard for liberal democracy in a place that supposedly has none of it. I think it's a double edged sword for the Zionist side, because I think it is embarrassing for them that their government is filled with, you know, Ben-Gavirs, that in the words of, I forget who said it, but it's their government is led by Duke Cunningham and his cabinet is filled with guys who worship Dylann Roof.
absolutely.
Like, but I think for like the liberal Zionist side, like Sacha Baron Cohen, they're secretly thrilled that it's Netanyahu, because then they get to pretend that like any excesses or anything that's embarrassing about Israel is the result of, in their minds, Israel being under the sway of this Trump-like figure.
Yeah.
Like there's this, I'm not going to say who it is, but it's an annoying person.
Certainly a surplus of those right now.
Yeah. Who wrote in 2021, not this time, but 2021, the last time they just maimed fucking Gaza, she wrote this very like self-involved, self-pitying thing about her complicated feelings on Israel. And it was just pointless and meandering and incredibly self-centered at a time when Gaza was just being carpet bombed and Israeli snipers were taking out entire families' ankles. But it just boiled down to, this could be a liberal democracy, but it's under, you know, it's under the spell of a evil man who's doing disinformation. And like, it's, I don't know what these people would do if Netanyahu wasn't in charge.
Yeah.
Like, do you argue that like Kadima is far like Trump?
Felix, I think another thing at work here is like the fact that like every evil thing, like for instance, like if you're a liberal Zionist, you have to be against the West Bank settlements. And then like as long as Netanyahu's in charge, those are never going to stop. And in fact, they're going to intensify. I think you see a similar dynamic here in Democrats when they're confronted with the fact that Arab Americans or Muslim Americans are maybe withholding their vote from Joe Biden. And you see how immediately the Seldowitz jumps out of them.
Yeah,
they're like,
yes.
enjoy being in a camp. And I think for the liberals, they need to have a bad right wing guy carrying this out so they can displace onto that figure the evil things that they secretly want to take place.
Absolutely.
You know, like threatening, like for Democrats to be threatening Muslim Americans with deportation under Trump, wink, wink, is just like, they just want Trump to do that for them so they can say, oh, we didn't actually do that. We support Muslims.
Absolutely.
But as soon as they become inconvenient, like, for instance, whether they are voicing a political opinion in America as citizens of this country, or inconvenient in terms of, like, they live in a part of the world that Israel thinks is theirs, that their lives are forfeit.
Well, they don't
want to hear anything about it.
Arabs and Muslims, like, more generally, have their use as long as they're firmly within the democratic camp. And then once if they make any attempt to stray from that, or, like, you know, or any advocacy for anything but, like,
we need, like, an ethno-nationalist threatening to, like, ethnically cleanse the country to keep everyone in line.
And to keep
our good minorities in the tent pitching for us, because that threat of being, you know, even more egregiously victimized or oppressed is just held over their head. Not actually listening to them or doing anything that would actually win their vote. But no, like, they need to be disciplined with the threat, whether it's Netanyahu in Israel or Trump in America.
Well, I mean, and, like, the simple calculation that the White House has made, which, you know, maybe makes sense for them, right, is that there is a much more moneyed and influential block of voters, and those are people who are pro-Israel, whether they're mostly on the Democratic side, Jewish or Christian, that compared to the Muslim lobby and the Muslim voting block is completely outweighs them. And so, like, it's a very simple calculation that they're going to make. I mean, to the extent that, like, a voting block determines our relationship here, which I think in certainly when it comes to Jewish people, it definitely does. It doesn't matter. Like, they can afford to lose these Muslims, or they see that as an acceptable loss.
And they see that changing course on this would loop. I think they would justify it by saying that, like, even though it seems that, like, ceasefire is overwhelmingly the consensus majority public opinion, I think they justify to themselves that Biden switching course at this point, or doing anything that would be seen as anti-Israel, would lose him more votes than potentially he's already losing by alienating himself from the broad majority of public opinion, at least within his own party.
So crazy to see, like, I mean, you can just really trace the American relationship with Israel, you know, up from the 40s until the present day. And, like, it's so funny to, like, watch, like, Eisenhower or whoever, like, have this kind of, like, back and forth relationship to them in a way that's so unthinkable these days, right? Like,
George H.W. Bush. They probably fucked him over in 92 because of wrapping their knuckles.
Exactly. Like, Obama is, like, the anti-Israel president of our lifetimes. And it's like, he just didn't like Netanyahu. You know what I mean? And, like, it's astounding to me. And, like, Biden is just completely in line. And, you know, his defenders will say, like, oh, he's working tirelessly behind the scenes for a ceasefire or whatever, to help aid trucks get in. It's like, I don't think that gave them a blank check.
No, he's not. He's,
you know,
he's,
it's,
he officially removed his arms sales to Israel from public scrutiny.
But also it's like, you got to grapple with the fact that, like, okay, say, like, there is, like, a calls for a ceasefire, like, from the American government or from, like, Congress or whoever. I don't think there would be one. I think that Netanyahu and the Israeli government, I think that in large part they want to do this. I mean, Gaza is a headache for them. I think Gazans are a headache for them. And this is like I don't know. I mean, obviously we can discipline them in the way that, like, you know, we could withhold arms sales, or which I very much doubt would happen, but, like, we can, you know, some pledge of aid or even conditions on aid, which would be so unthinkable. But I think that people should grapple with the fact that, like, even if, like, the calls for ceasefire, which, by the way, do not get me twisted here, like, I'm very much for calling for a ceasefire, obviously for a ceasefire. I think that even if they do reach sort of a fever pitch and get some kind of whatever institutional support behind it, I don't know if that'll make a difference. Maybe it will. I don't know.
I think we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, but, like, during Obama, there was this current in Israel that they basically wanted to be a normal country. That is, to be a country that could survive without like U.S. aid. And now that is, like, you know, they admit is complete fantasy. They can't do that. I do think there's a few things that would be effective in at least modifying their behavior. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that it's been, like, 30 years of blank checks, and like anything that would be like a step back for them would be incredibly unpopular in Israel. Like people would riot if they like pulled settlements out of the West Bank. Unfortunately, I mean, it is so fucking grim when you read like stuff from the 80s and like James Baker is like he sounds like Jeremy Corbyn to you. It's so fucking grim. But yeah, no, it has been 30 years of just not only self-perceived invincibility under the aegis of their military, but total impunity on their own behavior. And that certainly conditioned their every politically active Israeli to just not accept any step back in this.
Well, I mean, like, obviously conditioning our military or foreign aid on things like dismantling the settlements or not using the weapons we give them to blow up hospitals and things like that. Obviously, that's a pipe dream. That's pie in the sky. But let's just expand on that. Let's just expand in a little exercise of imagination. Because, you know, like, there's lots of talk now, as there was in 2020 and 2016, about, like, oh, if you're withholding a vote from Biden, it means that you're, you know, killing American democracy. You know, Trump would be worse to the Palestinians, which is really funny to think about, trying to imagine with that scenario. But, like, okay, is there anything Biden could do at this point to potentially earn your vote? And for me, I think there is something he could do. Humanitarian intervention.
Yeah. Yeah.
No fly zone. Landing Marines in Gaza to like administer aid and rebuild infrastructure. And, you know, clipping a few Israeli F-16s. Like I said, using the U.S. military for what it's supposed to, you know, for what we're sold is the purpose of the U.S. military. Protecting innocent civilian life.
Honestly, yeah. If you actually did some show of force, I actually do think that would go a long way. Something.
I mean, they do have nukes, and then like I think they're more likely to nuke New York City than Iran is, for instance.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, if they like, you know, decided to violate a no-fly zone or whatever, they would find themselves in a shooting war with their only ally on the planet.
Here's my view on what should happen. I was greatly affected by the duplicity and the smoke screens that were thrown up by Saddam Hussein in 2003. When he successfully avoided UN weapons inspectors and hid nuclear bomb. I don't think we should make that mistake again. I think that UN and US weapons inspectors need to be led into Israel to Dimona and to see if they have weapons of mass destruction. And if they do, or if they deny those inspectors access, I think we need to launch a full ground invasion of Israel. And I mean, I'm not saying this like I have no particular enmity on towards Israel or Palestine. Here's the thing. As podcasters, what are we? Journalists, right?
Absolutely.
Correct.
We're journalists. And as a journalist, I'm nonpartisan. So like, yeah, Biden can't do anything to win my vote because I don't vote. The only thing I vote for is
truth, news.
Twice a week doing my show, it's fucking truth. Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that, like, out of just the interest of international law, I think UN weapons inspectors need to be let into Israel to inspect whether they have a weapon of mass destruction. Because it's an unstable government. You know, they've had a lot of different governments over the past, like, just few years. And I don't think that the nuclear option should be available to them.
They need to be put into a conservatorship. Like, yeah. Yeah. They're the Britney Spears of nations.
Korea.
Yeah, yeah. Like we would not give Italy like veto power over life and death on Earth.
No. Absolutely not. Could you even imagine for a moment? I don't think that Benjamin Netanyahu should. Yeah, well, it's just so. Yeah, I think that unfortunately we all agree is that America needs to invade.
Yeah,
humanitarian intervention. It's the only solution at this point.
I don't know if you guys saw this, but earlier in October, a Likud MP had some very harsh words for Russia, and I don't really expect this to go anywhere because. There was some diplomatic chattering from Russia against Israel back and forth during the start of the Ukraine war. Mm. But do you think that there's any possibility of like a further Russian-Israeli split? Because I actually do find that kind of interesting, because Israel obviously like needs us to survive, but they need a lot of other places to survive as well.
Yeah.
And like, no one on any side really likes to admit the extent of the Russian and Israeli relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't even have to go into population transfers. I mean, like, Israel is only allowed to hit targets in Syria because Russia lets them.
Yeah.
Do you see anything happening there, or just, you know, public harsh words and
I would guess public harsh words and same shit. I mean, my like dark horse theory there would be that the Israeli and Russian mafia are probably too closely linked for a real split to happen. But
yeah,
I mean, the whole thing with Netanyahu is like,
someone's got to buy all the weapons we sell them.
Exactly. Yeah. Netanyahu is like whole his whole like domestic persona has been like, I talk to the Americans and the Russians. I'm trying to do that. Yeah. I talk to Americans and the Russians. He made a lot of hay out of his relationship with Putin. And there were this sort of like quasi diplomatic overtures, you know, like a year or whatever into Ukraine war. I think it was like a year. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting. I always assume that any like public statement any country makes at like the international level is just phony baloney, you know what I mean? Like everyone's kind of just like blowing smoke or whatever. But it would definitely be in the interest of their ally Syria. But I don't think Syria has a lot of leverage in that relationship with Russia. And so, I mean, they're probably being told just, you know, don't do anything, just, you know, chill out or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, it's the same thing can be said for Israel's relationship with China, you know. It's like, well, it's not the closest relationship in the world, but like, you know, China owns a port in Israel. The countries have pretty firm trade ties. I always am like, nothing's going to happen until something happens. And so I don't know, but, I would certainly be welcome.
Yeah. It would be kind of fun if they actually had a meaningful fracture.
Yeah. I would love that.
Well, we've gone long today, but before we go, we talked to all Israel Palestine today, so I have one domestic political story that I think bears bringing up on today's show before we get out of here. And by way of bringing it up, I will just simply ask you, Brace and Felix, have you ever been in a meeting or a social situation that was so boring and annoying to you that you wished you could die right then and there?
Oh, bro! I just got back from Thanksgiving.
So many times, my brother.
It's like, yes. So, with that in mind, I simply have to give a tip of the hat to Ron DeSantis election integrity official Peter Antonacci, who did just that. This is from Florida Bulldog. Peter Antonacci, Governor Ron DeSantis's handpicked choice last year to lead the state's controversial new elections fraud office, collapsed and died in a hallway in the governor's office moments after abruptly leaving a contentious meeting on September 23rd, 2022. That Antonacci, 74, was stricken in the governor's office was kept secret at the time. Instead, authorities only said he died while at work in the Capitol building, of which the governor's office is a part. Apparently, this guy walked out of a meeting with Ron DeSantis, dropped dead in the hallway, and his body remained on the ground for nearly a half an hour. So, I mean, I got to say, like, I have so much respect for this guy.
So much respect.
That is the best way to die. You know,
I can imagine
out of a boring meeting and you fucking, you will own forever the annoying assholes who bored you.
Maybe it's just like, I feel like at a certain point, he just like, his eyes just like focused for the first time. He realized what he was doing, like where he was sitting, like, oh, I'm talking to Ron DeSantis, I'm sitting in this chair, I'm election. Like, and he just like, excuse me, I need to go to the bathroom. And then just got up and with every cell in his body was just like, shut down, die. Let me die. Because sometimes I think that, I understand that. Like sometimes, so many times people are talking to me or whatever, and like just punishing, you know, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You never like just try to like, you're like, shut down, just shut down, just shut down. Like you're willing your like internal organs.
You're willing every molecule to just stop.
Yeah, exactly. Like just let me go. let me go right now. Cause what if this is forever? And so I respect that. Also, fucking, you know what? Biden body count.
Yep.
I'm going to say it right there. Biden body count coming up. It looks like it's election season in about a year. I have a feeling
he was
the
elections fraud guy. He was the guy looking into that. And he just,
You know, it's like, I can't wait till Ron DeSantis is just at it. I'm sick of thinking about him.
I haven't thought about him in months. This is the first time I've said the name Ron DeSantis on this show in at least a month or two.
Yeah.
The only time I think about Ron DeSantis is sometimes I'll look at like the Twitters of those like the based guys who like split from Trump because they got money from fucking whatever the Hudson or not. What's this? The Hudson?
Hoover?
No, not Hoover. What's the Heritage? Other fucking stupid motherfucking one? No,
Claremont.
You know it, Claremont. The little Claremont cocksuckers. They like, cause those, some of those guys like went over to the DeSantis camp and it's just like, how the fuck are you this stupid to think that this would be like, you think Ron DeSantis is going to be president?
Yeah.
Well, I was reading today, so fun.
About, it's so fun to watch like Groypers do Elizabeth Warren stuff.
Yes.
I was just at AutoZone and the blue collar guys there were talking about how serious Ron DeSantis is. Shut up.
Because like all the big money has left Ron. And I saw an article today about the Home Depot guy, Ken Langone, is getting ready to like drop $20 million on Nikki Haley or something like that.
Oh my God.
And it's like,
I would drop $20
Why don't these guys spend $100 million to assassinate Donald Trump? Because that's the only way they're getting their guy in the fucking Republican Party Trump, nomination.
That's how you know. That's how you know that hitmen aren't real.
Yes.
Yeah. No one's done that.
The Democratic and Republican Party could solve all of their problems if Donald Trump just said, let's say, got hit with a heart attack gun.
Yeah.
It would be so easy to do. Felix, you could have pulled off that fentanyl ear horn shit at Mar-a-Lago. You could do that. You could assassinate Donald Trump that easy.
He's the only guy that would work on if you just came there with the evil ear device and you're like, okay, Donald, it's ear day. Oh, really? Already?
Yeah. It's like I feel like Donald Trump is the most assassinatable president probably of all of them. I guess if a 12-year-old girl had a gun or something, Bill Clinton could probably get killed. But like it's like Donald Trump, like he's just like hanging out at the country club all the time. You know what I mean? Like it's like he hangs out with like a bunch of like, you know, it's like bumps. None of these guys are going to be like, if you just be like, yeah, I would like to pay my respects to Mr. Trump. They're like, oh, go right ahead. Get in there. Yeah. It just proves that maybe he's just protected by God.
Yeah. It's like it costs what? Like $250,000 to get membership at Mar-a-Lago. I don't even think you need membership. You could probably just walk in from the back.
A-pass. Yeah.
That ain't like
I would just go in and be like, oh, no. I'm Saudi. And they'd be like, all right, get in there, whatever. Like, it just, if you act confident enough, you can get a Mar-a-Lago.
I'm here to buy one of Jared's buildings. Yeah. Just direct me to the former president.
I would just say, I'm David, the orthodontist's son.
Yes.
And then there's probably like a guy who fits that description who's a member. Did you guys see that news story that I posted a few months ago that was like, this guy got arrested for trying to hire a hitman who is obviously a cop to assassinate an 11-year-old he got into an argument with.
printthehitman.com.
That is, dude. Like that's, you know, the only hitmen that exist.
You have to be well ensconced in a criminal organization to know of anyone who would kill someone for money.
Check this out. Hitmen are real. A friend of mine, I won't name him on the show, but you guys know him too. His parents, rabbi or whatever, in the 90s hired two hitmen to kill his wife, which they did. They murdered
Jesus
his wife.
Jesus Christ.
Two hitmen. Must have been a big wife. and one of them, I said that when his dad told me the story, I said that and it's no response from him. One of them, like, I guess felt bad and confessed to, I meant to look this up. I just learned this, confessed to a journalist and like, you know, and ended up with the rabbi getting arrested in prison. Rabbi converts to Islam.
You can't. can't do that.
That's what you do in prison. No, that's what everyone does in prison.
No, no. No, fuck that. Fuck that. I don't care if I don't care if you're reformed. The only way out of this is in a box.
Yes. he converted to Islam.
I've heard about guys converting to white guys converting to Judaism in prison because you get a kosher meal, which is less awful than the regular fare that they serve in America's correctional facilities. But yeah, I like a guy who's already entitled to a kosher meal converting to Islam in prison just because, dude, when in Rome.
Yeah.
It would be cool if there was like a prison gang for guys who got caught spying for Israel.
By the way, gentlemen, did you see Jonathan Pollard's comments on the hospital?
It's hard to miss Jonathan Pollard.
Yeah. He looked
the nerve of this cocksucker is unbelievable.
He looks like he looks like a version of Santa Claus who molests the kids and leaves no presents.
Jonathan
the nerve
Pollard
of this asshole who fucking was basically put in a U.S. prison for coughing up atomic secrets, and then Trump pardoned him and he gets to live in Israel now, was going in the Israeli press saying that we shouldn't give back any of our prisoners.
Maybe he misses prison. That's what he says. He's like, they're probably having a great time in there. Pollard is, I know he's gonna. He's like one of my most hated guys because he's so smug.
Yeah,
just like he makes me sick. But I do love it when they trot his fucking pig ass out to give interviews and shit happens.
It is amazing how like they treat him like he's Spears from Band of Brothers. Like he is a hero to them. And yes, it's like, could you guys get a like less scumbag hero? Like they try to make it sound like he sold secrets to Israel out of like some deep moral conviction. He tried to go to Pakistan first.
Like, dude, imagine all this could be so different if he had gone to Pakistan and fucking what actually would be the response now? Like, would it be Pakistanis joining in on the pro-Israel stuff, or to be Indians sort of abstaining from it?
That would change everything. No more India is lying to, sir. I love that.
I rock with them. I rock with all people from the subcontinent. I want to make that very clear.
I really feel that like 90% of all like alt-right Twitter accounts are just like 13-year-olds in India.
Oh, yeah.
Without
like 90% of them are like an Indian kid who's late to geometry class talking about FBI crime stats.
Dude,
in America.
Every time I see one of those accounts that's like cultural aficionado and they post
censored men.
Any of those accounts where like all they do is like they post like the Sydney Opera House and they're like a degenerate monument to sodomy.
Yes.
And then they post like a cut, like the something from the God of War games, and they're like, this is real architecture.
Yeah, it's like that. I know your ass is in fucking Delhi, bro.
Yeah, that is you're totally right. That is a child in Hyperbod. Like nowhere else.
Oh man. Indian rules.
They're so cool. Like I love that they're the only country that can resist American cultural hegemony, just because like Netflix will go over there and release a documentary that's like not even like hardline or against Modi. It's just like, I don't think it's good to kill all the untouchables.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, we're executing the CEO of Netflix India if he doesn't leave the country.
You know what's funny is I was just reading about Indian Jews and I didn't realize that Indian Jewish people were like the founders of Bollywood.
Like,
even over there, we do it too.
Well, you know what, guys? We're going late, but since we're talking about India, I have to bring up this article about how Gavin Newsom just banned a bill in California that would ban caste-based discrimination. We've talked about on this show about how, like, how can Joe Biden keep ignoring, like, his own Democratic voters on ceasefire? How can he so blatantly, like, in the face of this genuine outrage and moral stance by his own voters, how can he choose to stay the course? Well, rest assured that the Democratic Party will, in fact, listen to their voters and change course on an important issue, provided that they are all high caste Indians. Listen to this. Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed a bill that would have made California the first state in the country to expressly ban discrimination based on caste, stating that the measure was unnecessary because it was already covered by existing laws.
Interesting.
And basically, like, a bunch of well-heeled Indian Democratic Party donors all lobbied him quite strenuously to veto this bill, because in the New York Times, one of them is quoted as saying, caste-based discrimination simply doesn't occur in America. And everyone they interview is a Brahmin. It was like, when Vivek was just like, in America, my parents can shake hands with a Domino delivery guy who's an untouchable.
And I think that moved a lot of people when Vivek said that.
It's really funny too, because it's like, maybe Newsom vetoed this because if caste-based discrimination was outlawed, we'd probably lose a lot of the people who are in charge of the social justice arena and anti-racism.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Gavin has been on a veto spree. Like, before this, the California state legislatures are trying to do a bunch of, like, you know, Biden-esque things, these types of things that aren't like huge gestures, but they're the type of thing that you do so you can point to something and be like, oh, look, you know, look at all the stuff we did. We capped the price of insulin at like $35. And like, he's even vetoing those. And I don't know what his calculus is. He clearly like thinks this is going to help him become president. And I don't see how. Like, they're going to call him, like, you know, a far left liberal you know, pin all the misery of San Francisco on him and his policies. What, like, is his plan going to be like, oh, you think that San Francisco is my fault? Well, I have upheld the caste system. What is the calculus
and
here?
Apparently one of the people lobbying Newsom on this was Kamala Harris's mother.
Interesting.
I don't really know if this bill is still happening. I don't know. Oh yeah, but he's doing DeSantis.
Oh god,
that must have been binned a while ago.
Oh god,
it's on Newsmax. Well, what's the one that Cuomo's on now?
Cuomo's on something called like News Buddy or some shit.
Yeah, it's like they're hosting the governor's debate.
Cuomo is like the lead into Bluey. the DeSantis Newsom debate is going to be like the most low viewership event ever.
Yes.
Who is watching that?
Who would watch that?
If I walked in on a family member watching that, I would rather see them watching child pornography.
Honor killing. That's an honor killing right there.
Yeah, well, that's not legal in California. I mean, look, I don't know if this bill is truly necessary enough. I don't know enough about caste-based discrimination in America, but it just seems like... It's a ton of the Democratic Party listening to a constituency and changing course. This is the funniest possible example.
Absolutely.
Of them saying,
there is literally a ton of caste-based discrimination at the tech companies, because a lot of the people who will be in charge of hiring are obviously from, you know, high caste, and just like will only hire people from that caste.
Oh, okay. So I guess this bill actually is desperately needed. Yeah. Okay, good. So it is just him being evil. All right. You know what? We've gone so long today. Let's wrap it up there, fellas.
I have to plug something.
Okay, please, Brace, go ahead.
Except I can't say what it is.
Okay, well, just give us an
the best
give us
kinds
a little,
of plugs.
A little preview, yeah.
I'm going to try to talk around it. In 1 month from now, you might be thinking, what will the world be like? And it's impossible to say. It will be 2 days after Christmas, and possibly you'll be sad. Maybe you find out your parents are getting divorced. Maybe you found out your parents are opening up their marriage. Maybe you found out your parents are opening up their marriage to you, and now you're also you're in there.
You're in a thruple with your mom. And
you're in a thruple, and maybe more if you have siblings. I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. On that week or the week before, I haven't decided yet, and neither of the other people. there will be a product that is launching that will change your life forever.
This is a Truanon based product. It's
a Truanon based physical product.
It's a made
in China.
Ooh.
Made every single
yes,
part of it.
Yes.
Made yes. in a motherfucking in China. In the People's Republic of China.
Ooh.
And it's gonna change the political landscape of this country. And at a time, that's the real promise of this product, which I won't name. At a time when I think a lot of people are going to be like, I don't even know if I want to keep being married to my parents or even have parents, or I wish I could die from some manner that lets me still go to heaven. You'll be like, I need something. I need to heal. And this product will do just that. We're going to destroy. We're going to annihilate partisanship. Anything to do with we're going to make everybody, every voter, every
basically
every
like when this product appears. Politics, as we formally understand it, will be over.
Dead. Done. Absolutely. Yeah. And healing will begin.
Well, we'll wait with bated breath for the launch of this secret Truanon product. I actually have a slightly more specific plug, and that is this upcoming Sunday, January 7th in the evening, but really I'll be there all weekend. I will be at the New Bedford Whaling Museum, participating in the annual Moby Dick Marathon. I will be reading as part of, I'll be one of the participants reading the entire book of Moby Dick over the weekend of January, I was like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'll be there Sunday, January 7th at the New Bedford Whaling Museum reading from the great American novel. Pull up. The
following weekend, Felix and I will be in Tokyo, Japan, showing off our, well, quite frankly, the blubber that we got from doing real whaling, which we'll decline to participate in, and is a cultural practice that is different, but I think it is good to do new things. Felix has done it several times. That and cat killing kind of was his thing before Chapo, and I'm just glad that I'm honored to be joining him on the trip.
We need to bring back a heritage American industry, whaling.
This is a huge thing. People really don't know how intelligent whales are and how empathetic they are and how impressive it is for a human to kill them. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing a lot on this trip. We're going to show off the amazing blubber we've collected. We are going to do our favorite thing. We're going to tell Japanese people about our favorite Jewish ghouls and monsters.
Over the carcass of a blue whale and its family.
That's right.
All right. All right. Brace, Truanon, thank you so much for joining us today. Till next time, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Where the whale fish blew. Oh, we struck that whale and the line played out. But she gave a flourish with her tail. And the boat capsized and four men were drowned. We never caught that whale, brave boys. We never caught that whale. To lose the men, the captain cried. It grieves my heart full sore. But oh, to lose 100-barrel whale, it grieves me 10 times more, brave boys. It grieves me 10 times more. Now the wintry star doth now appear. So boys, we'll anchor away. It's time to leave this cold country and homeward bear away, brave.